This is a download from Nature Publishing Group.
Hello and welcome to this special podcast from Nature on the Eppendorf Young Investigator Award. Every year since 1995, Eppendorf has awarded the prize in partnership with Nature to young European scientists to reward them for their outstanding research in biomedical science. Last year, we celebrated the work of Professor Adrian Liston, group leader at the VIB Translational Immunology Lab at the University of Leuven in Belgium. He received the award for his work in elucidating key mechanisms by which the immune system avoids attacking its own organism whilst remaining effective against pathogens. This year, at the 22nd award ceremony, the panel chose Tom Baden from the University of Sussex in the UK. Tom was awarded the prize of €20,000 for his work in understanding the computational mechanisms and signal processes in the retina. I travelled to Heidelberg to attend the award ceremony, held at the city's European Molecular Biology Laboratory's Advanced Training Centre. Sadly, Tom wasn't able to attend the ceremony due to illness, so I also had the opportunity to meet him on his home turf in his lab at the University of Sussex, where we sat down to talk about his research.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
On winning this award. We were sorry not to have you at the award ceremony. How does it feel to have been part of it and to have won this award?
Oh, well, it's very nice, of course. I mean, I'm very humbled by this situation. Of course, it represents a long-standing team effort, right? So especially the work on mouse that we're going to talk about now, I guess.
At the award ceremony via Skype, you gave us a talk about your work, which you titled What the Eye Tells the Brain. So tell us a little bit about that work.
In the retina of vertebrates, what we have is a layered structure. So on the one end, the light hits the so-called photoreceptors, so these cells pick up the light and transduce it to electrical potential. And on the other hand, you've got the so-called ganglion cells, which are the connection to the brain, so they send information to the brain. And in between that, you've got the bipolar cells, which connect the two. And effectively what we did in our research is we used optical imaging to record the responses of each element in that network in response to a set of visual stimuli, right? So we took the same visual stimulus and we presented it to different cells in that network. And that allowed us to, in a rather systematic manner, follow how visual patterns are filtered through the retinal network.
So let's visualize this retina network. Pick a stimulus and tell us how that filters its way through the retina.
Okay, so I guess a simple stimulus to use would be just a flash of light, right? So you're in the dark and you're switching on the light and switching it off again quickly. So in the mouse, you've got two types of these cone photoreceptors. Then what you will find is that all of your photoreceptors will decrease their activity when the light goes on. And then the next layer, the bipolar cells, you don't just have two in the mouse, you've got 14. And different types of bipolar cells will transform the stimulus in a different way. So on the one hand, you've got the so-called off bipolar cells, and all they will do in the first approximation is basically copy the photoreceptor signal. They will also decrease the activity when the light goes on. But then you've got another set of bipolar cells, which are the on cells, which will flip that signal, so they will increase the activity when the light comes on. Right, so just going from the photoreceptor to the bipolar cells, we've now split the signal into what we call the on and the off pathway. And then within each of these groups, the ons and the offs, they don't do exactly the same thing. There might be differences, for example, in the speed at which they respond, right? So you might have a fast on cell or a slow on cell. You might have differences also in the spectral preference. They prefer the green or the blue light, or if they don't mind. And then that set information, now not two, but 14 streams, gets sent to the next layer in the retina, which are the ganglion cells. And if you count up the ganglion cells, we're not quite sure on the numbers yet, but it's certainly more than 30. They will be much more specific. So again, you will have still some cells that will be just on cells or off cells with a certain speed, but those will be in the minority now. Other cells with much more refined stimulus response characteristics will come in, things like direction-selective ganglion cells. So those are cells that will only respond if a stimulus is moving in a particular direction. Or you've got the so-called orientation-selective ganglion cells. They need the stimulus to be oriented along a particular axis, usually vertical or horizontal axes. So this is basically, in a nutshell, how the retina parallelizes the stimulus, and then ultimately, rather than just having two representations, has something like 30 or more representations, and it sends those to the brain. And based on those, what we call parallel channels, the brain then reconstructs the image.
What? How did you go through your research? Right? What were the different steps that you took in order to go through it?
So we looked at the output synapses of the photoreceptors, which are connected to those horizontal cells and also the bipolar cells, and just presented different patterns of light and measured how they respond to light in a systematic way. What was special about that is that we looked not just at any part of the eyes, but we looked for different regions of the eye. For example, the upper and the lower half. The signals that we saw in the two halves of the eye were a little bit different. So specifically, the ones, the cones that looked up, the synapses that looked up, were responding better to dark contrasts on a bright sky, such as a bird in the sky.
So and it's seems important for a mouse to be able to see that.
Exactly, right? So if you, it seems that the mouse has biased, let's say, the network that looks at the sky already at the input stage to be particularly good at seeing the dark shapes, maybe at the expense of not being so good at seeing light shapes. Afterwards, concentrated on the next synaptic layer, which is the so-called inner plexus layer. This is where the bipolar cells provide inputs for the ganglion cells. And again, there are some inhibitory neurons there, the amacrine cells, which provide lateral feedback. So what we did there is we used imaging as well. And we used pattern light stimulation to characterize how different types of bipolar cells, which are positioned in different depths of this synaptic layer, respond to a defined set of stimuli. Well, as it turned out, the different bipolar cells responded in different ways, which wasn't too surprising. But I think the punchline here was that these differences were not very pronounced if you were to use a small stimulus, just a spatially restricted stimulus. So this really...
What do you mean by that? Like a small flash of light?
One that would cover roughly the photoreceptors, let's say 10 photoreceptors, which would be the input to that bipolar cell. But then if you take a stimulus which is much bigger, which maybe would hit 100 photoreceptors and therefore also hit neighboring bipolar cells and circuits which are there, then the differences that we saw between the bipolar cell outputs, between the different types, were much more pronounced. And that led us to conclude that it's very important, the size of the stimulus is very important, of course, but also that the specific size at which this happens particularly well is also the size at which the ganglion cells respond quite well. So it seems that the bipolar cells are tuned to a size regime which is appropriate for the next layer down, which was quite neat, I thought.
So this was the research that you did on the retina of the mouse.
Yes.
And you are now working on the retina of a zebrafish.
Yes.
How, apart from the animal, has your research changed and moved forward in this time?
So one of the things in particular that's nice about zebrafish is their color vision. So the mice, they don't have particularly pronounced color vision. They do see colors, but it's not one of the main things that they deal with. Whereas for the fish, this seems to be very important. You may know that in humans, we are trichromats. So we've got three different cone-type photoreceptors, which pick up the red, green, and blue light. And the fish, they're actually tetrachromats. So they've got four of them. They can see UV light, which is actually not so uncommon amongst animals. It just seems uncommon to us because we can't see it. This means that now you've got, again, a retinal network with the same players as the mouse has, but it needs to deal with four colors, not two. And that means that presumably the network needs to be either more efficient at dealing with color or will get more complex. And so this is something that we're looking at now. So we're looking at different layers of neurons in the retina and also in the brain of the zebrafish, and we're seeing how they process color.
You've looked at the mouse eye. You're now looking at the zebrafish. Are you intending to look at the human eye as well?
For me, that I'm interested in how neurons achieve computation. The species is secondary to the behavioral task the animal is trying to achieve, right? So if you've got an animal that uses its eyes for a very interesting thing, a unique thing, then presumably the retina will be uniquely adapted to that thing. Take an archer fish, right? So there are these fish, they spit water at insects above the water surface, the insect falls in and the fish eats them. So for that, you need to be very good at seeing the insect and then turning that into a set of command instructions that lets you spit in the right direction, right? So this is a complex behavioral task. And if we now were to look at the retina of this fish, presumably we would find regions that are specialized for that behavior. And then if we can look at the functional level of what the computations are that are implemented, I think that would get us a bit closer again to learning how neurons achieve specific things.
That was Tom Baden. Even though Tom couldn't attend the event, I did have the opportunity to speak to Maria Lepton, director of the European Molecular Biology Organisation, EMBO, and the judge on the panel for the 2017 Eppendorf Award.
What was it about his work that, for your group as a judging panel, really stood out?
So that's really very hard to say. What we really care about is that it's clear, especially because this is a prize for young people, that the findings, the discovery, the excellence comes from the person, not from the lab in which they work. So we want to know that the person determined their own path, that they drove the project.
And so this is why, Tom Baden really stood out.
Exactly. I mean, it may also have been true for others, but, you know, he was just that little bit more inspiring than the next one. He didn't do the career thing, you know, the advice thing of thinking deeply and coming up with his very own postdoctoral project and then following that, ostensibly. But in fact, he did. So he went to a lab where there was an existing project. He worked on that project. He did it very, very well. But his own sort of fizzing mind made him do all sorts of other stuff, which he followed up and did equally successfully. He has a passion that he wants to follow, and he's able to follow that passion in the labs that he chose. And he chose them because they worked on exciting stuff. And then he used the good environment to do what he wanted to do.
I also had the pleasure to speak with Tom's very proud parents, dentist Gabriela Baden and lawyer Eberhard Baden.
So you must be both extremely proud of your son.
Yes, we are. At the moment, yes, it's true.
Okay, so how did you help him on that journey?
He always did what he wanted. It was difficult to lead him. And this, from the very beginning, as he decided to do research on the brain at the age of 15. He had his own opinion and he went for it, always. Mm-hmm.
Someday he decided I will study at Cambridge. So we told him, that's a bit difficult. You must have a triple A. In the exams.
So I do.
I do. and he did.
Yeah. Wow, so a very impressive young man.
Yes, and he was not immediately accepted after his application at Cambridge University was not immediately accepted. But no problem for him, because his civil service. He had to do this, and he took 1 year for the civil service, applied again, and then it was okay. He knew what he wanted.
That's all from this special podcast from Nature. Tune in next year when we'll be celebrating the 23rd Eppendorf Young Investigator Award. Until then, I'm Julie Gould. Thanks for listening.
The Eppendorf Award for Young European Investigators is presented to young scientists for outstanding achievements in the field of biomedical research. For more information, please go to eppendorf.com/award.